some perspective on why stock markets around the world are having such a bad day.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. Some see a chain reaction starting in Tokyo, bouncing through Washington, then ricocheting back to Japan. The Bank of Japan this week suggested that more stimulus is not okay, and America's central banker Ben Bernanke told Congress yesterday that sooner rather than later, the Federal Reserve could taper off its stimulus. Add in some downbeat numbers coming from factories in China, and here's what we have. The Nikkei Index in Japan, which had been on a tear, rising 93% since last June, fell 7.3% today. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong fell 2.5% overnight. In Europe, the German DAX Index currently down 2.7%. The FTSE in London down 2% now. Index futures in the U.S. are trending sharply downward this morning after the Dow fell just 80 points yesterday. The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes is in Tokyo on this rocky day for markets. Morning, Rupert.
Good morning, David.
So Wednesday, the Bank of Japan, the central bank there, says it'll continue buying bonds to keep interest rates down. But what? It won't do even more to stimulate the economy?
At the moment, it won't do anything this month. It's going to hold off, and that we'll have to wait again until next month to see if it's going to increase the amount of bonds that it's buying.
If that's enough to drive share prices down in Japan the way we saw today, it must have also something to do with a Japanese stock market that's just been overdone, going through the roof in recent weeks.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is a stock market that is driven almost entirely by sentiment. So we've seen this huge stock market rise over the last few months, which has been driven by the fact that the government has been saying it's going to take all these bold economic measures, but nothing fundamental has changed underneath to the Japanese economy yet.
It's just so ironic. There's this notion that the Japanese central bank is a little bit worried about overstimulating at a time when you're not saying things are overstimulated yet in the real economy.
Well, if bond yields rise here, then people get very, very nervous about the scale of the government debt, because government debt here is bigger than any other country in the industrialized world. It's 230% of GDP. Currently, the Japanese government spends 25% of all government spending just on servicing its debt. So if interest rates or bond yields go up, they can get into a very, very bad situation very quickly. And that's one of the things that really makes people nervous.
The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes in Tokyo, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Ford Motor Company is calling it quits in Australia after a nearly 90-year run. The automaker says it'll shut down its two factories there and will halt production entirely in 2016. From Sydney, Stuart Cohen has more.
Ford's been building cars in Australia since 1926, when it made Model Ts. In its heyday, Ford Australia ran factories in five of the country's major cities, pumping out the number one selling passenger car, the Falcon. But high manufacturing costs and a strong Aussie dollar have made it cheaper to buy imports. The company, which lost $600 million over the last 5 years, has been relying on government handouts to stay afloat. Ford Australia President Bob Graziano.
Our locally made products continue to be unprofitable, while our imported products are profitable. Our costs are double that of Europe and nearly four times Ford in Asia, leading us to the conclusion that manufacturing is not viable for Ford in Australia in the long term.
The shutdown will put around 1,200 people out of work. That leaves GM as the only American company still building cars in Australia. But GM's subsidiary Holden is signaling it's likely to close up shop too. Analysts say the end is imminent for the entire Australian car industry. In Sydney, I'm Stuart Cohen for Marketplace.
Enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Kobe Bryant seems to have the Midas touch. He's worth tens of millions. Even his old basketball shorts are worth a lot. Those are some of the items that Bryant's mother wants to sell at auction, and he's gone to court to try to stop her. For athletes, sometimes the biggest challenges come from family. From the Wealth and Poverty Desk, Noel King has the story.
Wade Davis admits he's no Kobe Bryant. He spent 4 years in the NFL, but he was a free agent, making six figures a year, not millions. Still, for a working-class kid, that was a lot of money. So when he went out with friends, there were certain expectations.
I can remember going to bars and clubs, and I don't even drink alcohol, you know, and getting stuck with a $400 to $500 tab. And I'm like, wait a minute, I had four Sprites.
Davis says his parents didn't ask for much, but his three older sisters and extended family.
When you go out to dinner and it's 17 people there, they're ordering everything from lobster and steak and then the dessert and another dessert. And they're just laughing and joking. And when the bill comes, it's like, here you go, Wade.
Don't take 17 people out to dinner.
Andre Merkin, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo, tells athlete clients, if your family asks for money,
call Andre. Call me first. Let me be the guy to say no.
It's not just the family you grow up with. Rick Flynn of Rothstein Cass, a financial advisory firm, also advises athletes. He says marrying young is the biggest threat to wealth.
I'm not telling you everybody needs to do it like Derek Jeter and not get married until after their career, but the number one destroyer of wealth is going to be divorce.
Merkin and Flynn say the most effective financial advisors for young athletes are retired pros who have gone broke, because those guys really understand the mix of pride and pressure that a young athlete feels. Wade Davis remembers that feeling.
I'm not going to lie, there were times when I did pay just because it felt good, you know, to not only pay for my friends, but to feel like I was this superstar, and even though I was the 53rd guy on the roster.
Davis is retired, and he's doing just fine financially. He still gets requests for money, and still...
I have a problem saying no to family members, friends. It's just who I am as a person. I look in the mirror sometimes and go, just say no, just say no.
But he says he doesn't expect that saying no will ever get that much easier. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
More wealth and poverty coverage at Marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.